Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Right now, fair skies over Nashville. It's 28 degrees at 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. The Republican Party has had its rebellious period, dating one bad boy after another. They even had a crazy fling with a woman sophomore year. But people grow up. They do the responsible thing. And just as the GOP was walking down the aisle, they tore off their veil and ran off with a wild and crazy guy in a sweater vest. We'll ask about this latest rebellion, plus jazz singer Kurt Elling explains that scat singing doesn't mean what we think it means, and Carl Castle loses it while coaching the NPR softball team.
You have to catch the ball when you're supposed to catch the ball.
We'll ask who is really giving that advice when we come back after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. In the campaign for the Republican presidential nomination, Mitt Romney has no public events scheduled today after narrowly winning the Maine caucuses yesterday. He collected 39% of the vote. Ron Paul wasn't far behind with 36%. Rick Santorum won 18% and Newt Gingrich had 6%. The next contest will be at the end of the month with primaries in Arizona and Michigan. Rick Santorum did not take today off and appeared on some of the Sunday television talk shows. He reiterated that he is the better choice to face President Obama this fall. Here's how he put it on ABC's This Week.
Mitt Romney is the author of Romney Care, which is the biggest government expansion in the history of the state of Massachusetts, and was the template for Obamacare. He's supported cap and trade and in Massachusetts.
Over at Fox News Sunday, former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin said Romney has more work to do to become the nominee. She said she's not convinced he's moved beyond what she called his pretty moderate, in some cases pretty liberal, past. Arab League foreign ministers are meeting in Cairo to discuss the future of their troubled monitoring mission to Syria. They're considering asking for the UN to join the effort. Merritt Kennedy has more.
President Bashar al-Assad continues to crack down on dissent in Syria. Critics of the Arab League monitoring mission say the mission has failed to stop the bloodshed. The initiative has been put on hiatus until the League's foreign ministers reach a decision about its fate. This meeting follows a recent veto by Russia and China of a peace plan for Syria at the UN Security Council. Gulf countries have been at the forefront of the League's discussion on Syria, pushing for further action. Foreign ministers from the Gulf met independently this morning in preparation for the broader Arab League meeting. For NPR News, I'm Merritt Kennedy in Cairo.
There is still sporadic gunfire reported in the Syrian city of Homs, but a week-long government-led bombardment on the city appears to have let up. NPR's Kelly McGevers reports.
Activists and witnesses say they are only now beginning to understand the full effect of the bombardment of Homs that killed hundreds of people and injured more than 1,000 in the past week alone. In this video released by citizen journalists in Homs, a traumatized young boy who was found clutching his dead mother says he believes his parents are really in Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, the leader of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, has released a video urging all Muslims to back the uprising in Syria. Analysts say this feeds into the Syrian regime's narrative that a popular uprising that began last March is actually being led by terrorists. Kelly McGovern, NPR News, Beirut.
President Obama's chief of staff says it's only a matter of time until the Assad regime collapses. Jacob Liu told Fox News Sunday the government is feeling the serious financial pressure. This is NPR News. Islamist militants in southern Yemen claim they executed two men today, suspected of providing the United States with information used to carry out drone strikes in the area. They say the two men were beheaded at dawn by a group called Partisans of Islamic Law. The Grammy Awards will be given out tonight in Los Angeles. NPR's Mandalay Del Barco reports some musicians plan to protest changes in the awards categories.
Some musicians say they'll protest outside the Grammys over the Recording Academy's decision to eliminate 31 award categories.
By rendering us virtually invisible to the American public, they denigrate our music and they make our music seem like it's irrelevant.
Percussionist and bandleader Bobby Matos says this year's awards will no longer include less commercial, non-mainstream genres.
Well, in addition to Latin jazz, which is close to my heart, Cajun, Zydeco, Native American music, some of the mariachi categories, some of the blues categories, gospel categories, Hawaiian music, categories that are supported only by independent record companies.
Matos says 2,300 musicians and supporters are petitioning to restore the Grammy categories. Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News, Los Angeles.
Singer Jennifer Houston will be given a special tribute tonight to Whitney Houston, who died yesterday at the age of 48. Houston's body was found in her room in the Beverly Hilton Hotel hours before she was to attend a Grammy party. She won 6 Grammys during her career and had a string of hits, including this one. An autopsy will be held to determine the cause of death. Police say there were no obvious signs a crime had been committed. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. For 40 years, working to improve health and health care. On the web at rwjf.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you. We got a great show for you today. We got Grammy-winning jazz vocalist Kurt Elling. He'll be here with us later. Yes, that's exciting. Especially, he's going to answer every question entirely in song. But first, it's Valentine's Day next week, and so for this show only, special offer, we're offering a special prize, not just Carl's voice on your voicemail, but Carl's seductive voice on your voicemail.
This is Carl Castle. Bob isn't here right now, but Carl is.
He's pining for you, so give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter, this is Trisha, and I live in Dorchester, Massachusetts.
Dorchester? How
yep.
How are things in Dorchester?
They're pretty fine, thanks.
What do you do there?
I waitress, which is funding a hobby of being a novice flame worker, and I'm doing a life coach training program.
I'm sorry, a novice what?
Flame worker. It's I make glass beads and buttons in a stationary torch.
And you call this flame working?
I don't call it that. It's
I'm sorry. It's not your choice. It's not like you're sitting there going, I shall call this flame working. You're not. Well, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column. It's Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Trisha.
Hi, Roxanne.
And an author and humorist who will be appearing on the Moth main stage in New York City on March 16th, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hi, Trisha.
Hey, Tom.
And a comedian performing March 2nd at the Theater at Westbury in Westbury, New York, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Trisha.
So, Trisha, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will now read you 3 quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just 2 of them. Do that. You win our prize, Carl's voice on your voicemail. You ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Your first quote is from a prominent conservative pundit, Eric Erickson. He's finally announcing which candidate he's backing.
I would honestly prefer the sweet meteor of death.
Mr. Erickson would prefer the sweet, sweet release of global annihilation to any member of what group of people?
Democrats?
No.
Well, probably.
I'll give you a hint. Mr. Erickson is a conservative, and he's very disappointed.
Not a Republican.
Yes. Yeah, it is, in fact, the Republican presidential candidates. Just when you thought it was all over, when Mitt Romney was ready to strap the nomination to the top of his car and drive to the White House, Rick Santorum won three states on Tuesday, even though Missouri was a non-binding primary, and Minnesota has a long history of just messing with our heads.
I don't dislike Romney. I just find, as apparently most of the GOP party is, there's just nothing to kind of love about him. You know, he's just sort of, he's like porridge.
Porridge?
Yeah. You know, I don't object to it in principle, but I'm not attracted to it. Yeah.
Well, as you can think about it, you know, the global annihilating meteor has advantages as a president. I mean, it would destroy everything. But one of the things it would destroy would be wasteful government spending, so it appeals to Republicans. Seeing the success of the Meteor's campaign, Mitt Romney all of a sudden promised that he, too, would cover the earth with darkness for a millennium. Tricia, here is your next quote.
I deserve a second term, but we're not done.
Who says he deserves to be reelected because of all the things he has failed to do during his first term?
Gotta be President Obama.
Yes, it would be President Barack Obama. Well done. Yes. Obama did an interview before the Super Bowl where he pointed out that he has done a lot, but he didn't do enough, so we should reelect him so he can do more of the stuff he hasn't done yet. The president is running for re-election like a contractor who promised you a great job, but he's blown all his deadlines, you know? He's like, well, you know, if you want those marble countertops in this country of yours done right, you gotta be patient. His campaign slogan will be, Obama, hey, we're still waiting for some parts.
Yeah. No, it's more like, you know, Obama, we have your deposit.
You know? Trisha, you're doing well. Here is your last quote.
You have to catch the ball when you're supposed to catch the ball. My husband cannot bleeping throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time.
That was very good.
Thank you.
I appreciate, Carl, especially the way you put on lingerie to do that quote. For real. It was excellent. Trisha, that was supermodel Gisele Bündchen expressing her disappointment with her husband's team at what big event last week?
That was Super Bowl Sunday.
Super Bowl Sunday, yeah, the Super Bowl. Ms. Bündchen, the Brazilian supermodel, is, of course, married to the Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, who last weekend managed to once again lose a Super Bowl to Giants quarterback Eli Manning, who is not nearly as good-looking as Tom Brady and not nearly as married to a supermodel. Now, Ms. Bündchen's feelings were understandable. It's her husband, you know. But can you imagine if your wife was chased by paparazzi who provoked her into insulting your colleagues? It'd be like, it was ridiculous. He cannot bleep into the PowerPoint presentation and change the toner cartridge at the same time.
But I don't understand why she was criticized for that. Now, like, if my wife was the quarterback of the New England Patriots.
Which I've met your wife.
Course,
she's capable of
no,
doing that.
I would be a different man, admittedly. But and that happened to her. I mean, I wouldn't be bleeping, I'll tell you that. I would be bleeping mad.
She was? And
yes. I mean, you just...
Well, would you
you defend your mate, you know?
I know, but by throwing your mate's teammates under the bus, that was
absolutely
the problem.
Absolutely.
As usual, though, the big story out of the Super Bowl was the ads. The most controversial was this ad for Chrysler. Did you see it? Clint Eastwood saying it was halftime in America. And Republicans say this was a veiled payback to President Obama. Does everything have to be political? I mean, was the ad with the exploding vampires a critique of Wall Street? Was the halftime show with Madonna a convoluted but effective argument to maintain Medicare? I mean... Paula, you look puzzled. Did you not see the Super Bowl?
I didn't.
You're the one.
Yeah. I guess I was. And I can't understand being, like, looking forward to seeing a commercial.
These are really good commercials, though.
I don't care how good they are. there is no commercial that I would get, like, you know, somebody would yell, it's on, and then I would run into the other room.
Would you do it if the Three Stooges were in a commercial?
The Stooges would never have sunk so low.
I don't think that, I'm sorry, the sentence was just expounded on our stage. The Three Stooges would never sink so low.
I can't understand. A lot of places where I went the following days after the Super Bowl, and it would come up in conversation, just, you know, the grocery store or something with the checker, and they'd say, oh, do you see the Super Bowl? And I said, no, I don't watch the Super Bowl. And then they go, not the commercials? Like, no. Is it possible that I watched the commercials and not the Super Bowl? Why?
Yes, that is possible.
Okay,
people
but
do that.
Why? Right. Why would people do that?
Well, you TiVo it and you fast forward through the game parts. You know?
Gee, you guys, I hate to say it, but it's no wonder America's going downhill. Aren't we busier than that? I guess not. We're not. Okay,
no.
Good.
No. It's either that or watch the GOP race.
Yeah.
I'll go for the commercials.
Yeah, we're not going downhill. It's halftime.
And now it's time for some great commercials. Carl, how did Tricia do in our quiz?
Tricia, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done, Tricia. Congratulations.
All right.
Thanks so much for playing.
Thank you.
We want to remind everyone to join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, some bad health news. This week we learned the obesity rate has passed 50%, going upwards. Oy. Among what population?
50% of... Americans, yeah. A subset of Americans. Sort of a subset of Americans.
Yes, they're here in America with us.
Dogs.
Yes, dogs.
Really?
Dogs.
Wow.
More
guess.
Than half of the dogs in the United States are morbidly but adorably obese. Some signs your dog is fat. When it's time to fetch, it prefers to play no, you get it instead.
And that was one of the Super Bowl commercials this year. Was about a fat dog.
Yeah, but a
dog.
Fat dog.
Yeah.
It was adorable. You should have seen it, Paula. You would have enjoyed it.
It was really great.
My dogs are not fat, but I have a cat that is so fat that at one point I had one of those.
How fat is he?
I have one of those. I had like a it's a gray kind of a cat, and I had a exercise ball, not that I use it, but there it was in my living room, and the cat happened to be sitting just beside it trying to bathe itself, and I swear it looked like a match set.
Right.
Feeling like a big dog.
Coming up, badges but no brains. It's a law enforcement bluff to listen or call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. And jazz vocalist Kurt Elling joins us to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. The Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org. And Pimsleur Language Programs, whose Unlimited series offers the potential to record an answering machine message in a foreign language at Barnes & Noble Booksellers. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Glenn Washington, the host of NPR's Snap Judgment. NPR is about stories. Stories from real people. Stories from the streets, the kitchens, the factories, stories to make you laugh, make you cry, make you think, and every once in a while, stories that touch your heart. This is NPR.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The Obama administration put offshore wind farms on a fast track. Nuclear plants as well, which will face more obstacles. Also, Dan Shaun's critically acclaimed but often deeply disturbing short fiction. His new collection is called Stay Awake. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
weekdays at noon. Support for our programming on WPLN comes from the WPLN Producers Circle. The generous financial support of Producers Circle members helps fund unique local programming produced by Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 30 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Tom Baudette, and Paula Poundstone. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Segal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to see you again. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is David.
Hi, David. How are you?
Fantastic.
That's great. Me too. What's up, man? What are you doing?
Right now, I'm standing in my sister's bathroom, so I don't...
Why are you standing in your sister's bathroom?
Well, she has dogs, and they're wild, and, you know, so I just don't want to disturb the show. That's all.
Are you the kind of...
You're supposed to call 911, David, not...
Are you the kind of person who were in another person's bathroom to start opening up the drawers and seeing what they got? Do you do that?
Occasionally, but there's no real drawers. It's just like a little cabinet. And
really?
Yeah,
you want to open up the cabinet, see if there's anything really embarrassing, let us all know?
There's girl stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't know about that. No, never mind. We'll just move on. Well, welcome. Welcome to the show, David. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is David's topic?
You have the right to remain something.
Dumb criminal stories are a staple of this show, but rarely do we address the other side, dumb cops. So this week our panelists are going to read you three stories of stupid police mishaps that'll leave you feeling much less safe. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. You ready to play?
Been waiting all week.
All right. First, let's hear from Paula Poundstone.
Police stations are not what television cop shows might lead one to believe. Never is a case wrapped up in 44 minutes. And the old good cop, bad cop technique is harder to pull off in real life. It was only when Mr. Keogh's complaint against the police department made it before a judge that officers Spiller and Oleski realized that they had neglected to assign roles prior to questioning Mr. Keogh and had inadvertently conducted a good cop scenario. Douglas Keogh was detained by police in Chicopee, Massachusetts for several hours of questioning on suspicion of burglary and released without charge. Mr. Keogh, who denies anything to do with the burglary, alleges that once escorted to the police interrogation room, Officer Tad Spiller poured him some coffee and brought him two Kit Kat bars and a Butterfinger from the vending machine. After 30 minutes of questioning, Officer Spiller left the room. Minutes later, Officer Andy Oleski entered carrying a quart container of Ben & Jerry's Cherry Garcia and a spoon. Mr. Keogh consumed the ice cream and answered a few more questions. Officer Oleski left, and again, Officer Spiller soon entered, offering Mr. Keogh a vintage 40s bomber jacket and a gift certificate for a 10-minute airport chair massage. When Officer Oleski returned and Mr. Keogh asked to call his lawyer, Officer Oleski sent a limo to pick up his lawyer and requested the driver to supply a nice bottle of champagne. I was there for hours. I never really knew why. I thought maybe one of them was going to propose, says Mr. Keogh.
Good cop. Your next story of cops of the Keystone variety comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Harrisburg police officer Steve Franklin couldn't believe his ears. The four women in the next booth at Denny's, who he described as burglars dressed as nuns, were planning an early morning heist just about to happen. They'd obviously cased the joint. One would grab the good jewelry, another the silver, the third what they guessed was a valuable painting, and the fourth was a lookout. The ringleader barked, "I want to be in and out in 5 minutes. We've got two more houses to hit." Franklin tailed their van, called for backup, and then, lights flashing and guns drawn, arrested the robbers as they walked out with the goods. Except, As WGHB-TV reported, the robbery was really an estate sale, and the women were actually Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament buying merchandise for their church resale shop. The nuns, of course, made the weekend news. Denny's donated a year's worth of breakfasts to the order, and Officer Franklin is now on desk duty and volunteering once a week at the thrift shop.
A gang of burglars dressed as nuns turned out to be nuns. Your last story comes from Tom Baudet.
The private longings of an anonymous British probation officer can only be imagined. So let's try. For one thing, being anonymous. Why couldn't he have a name like Terry or Brad? Our anonymous probation officer thought his dream had come true when he was assigned to after-hours plainclothes duty in a crime-ridden business district of Sussex, an area under intensive video surveillance by a local police directorate. Anonymous's radio crackled. There was a suspicious character acting suspiciously in an unnamed alley. "Why, I'm in an unnamed alley," replied Anonymous. "Which way did he go?" The director told him. Anonymous followed. "Nothing." "There he is again," called the director. "I'm hot on his heels," said our man. He kept running, feet clapping, heart pounding, live on TV with the director directing. "I can't believe this is happening to me," he thought presciently, because it wasn't. When his boss walked into the directorate, he recognized the shadowy character on the video screens as none other than Anonymous, who had been chasing himself down the unnamed alleys of Sussex. Oh, everyone had a good laugh. Except our anonymous probation officer. What becomes of him? Perhaps living in a quiet country cottage under an assumed name like Terry or Brad.
All right. Here are your three stories from Paula Poundstone, two cops in Massachusetts who forgot that one of them needed to play the bad cop. From Roxanne Roberts, a cop who mistook a group of nuns for burglars pretending to be nuns. And from Tom Baudet, a cop who spent a good 20 minutes in England chasing himself. Which of these is the real story of inefficient police work?
I'm going to go with Roxanne's.
You're going to go with Roxanne's story of the cop who was convinced that those nuns were really burglars, dressed as nuns.
Yeah, I've met a couple cops, so...
No. You wouldn't put it by them.
Yeah.
Well, we spoke to somebody who was on top of this particular story.
A police sergeant came into the control room and just burst out into fits of laughter when he realized that the suspect and the officer were actually the same person and he'd been chasing himself around for 20 minutes.
That was Sarita Lund. She's the editor of Police Magazine in the UK, and they were tipped off to the story by the Sussex police. That is, of course, the story of the policeman who was chasing himself on closed-circuit TV. I'm so sorry. Obviously, Roxanne has fooled you as she has fooled so many. However, so you didn't win. You did earn a point for Roxanne, which I know she'll be thrilled. And thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Follow me where I go, what I do, who I know. Make it part of you to be a part of me.
And now the game where people who've done a lot of great things do something else. Kurt Elling is often called the greatest male jazz singer alive, but for many years he was the Susan Lucci of jazz. He'd be nominated for a Grammy every year, and then he would not win a Grammy every year. Another point of comparison to Ms. Lucci, the man rocks a formal gown. He got his first Grammy last year. He's also a favorite to win his second this year for his latest record, The Gate. We are so pleased to welcome Chicago's own Kurt Elling. Kurt, great to have you here. Thank you. So did you develop this desire to sing jazz early? Was this something that you did?
Not until late adolescence, we would call it, I guess, scientifically.
Right.
God, that's when I took up smoking.
Some people call it that.
Yeah. But that wasn't where you were going, weren't you?
No,
you
my father was a Kapellmeister or a church musician, so I took that from him and a lot of sort of the craft of music. And then I got turned on to jazz. And then when I came back here to go to the University of Chicago for Divinity School, which is another whole left turn, I was sitting in clubs at night.
Right.
And I'd come out of nowhere and do my little thing. And all these cats would just, "Hey, you sound great, and what's your name, and come back next week." And these old cats would put their arms around my shoulder and say, "You're with us. You're with, over and over again, this happened to me in Chicago, it happened to me in Minneapolis, it happened to me in New York. These beautiful, established artists would really surround me and remind me and pull me in. Never happened to me in divinity school.
Really? Strangely.
Never one. Oh, young man, you're with us. You're, come over here.
No.
You know, never happened.
So now you've been recording jazz for a while. You've been, God knows how many records, the first Grammy Award last year, another nomination this year. Top of the game. One of the things you're known for is your ability to scat. You're good at.
Some people think.
Can you like talk in scat? Can you like, if I were to ask you a question now, you could answer in scat?
If you need me to.
Oh,
but it
go.
Won't be
so,
coherent.
All right, well, here you go. So what do you think of the state of jazz in America?
Oh, well, boosh the blood to death, fluid the blood to you. Oh, you know, it's because it sounds a little Danish.
It does. Yeah.
Cartoon.
Yeah. Is that the secret?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It is the secret.
Is that all you guys have been doing? Deciding what bar to go to after the gig
Clark
in
Terry
Danish?
Clark lived over there long enough that he figured out that's how you... Because he had a whole bit he does called mumble. So here's... And then I go to Denmark and everybody understands me.